When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for all of Star Wars. This week, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 1 and 2 of Ahsoka, the brand new Disney series. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
Aaron, what'd you think of these first two episodes?
I don't know what to
great
say.
Great start. Fantastic.
Yeah, I
know. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah, because there's a whole bunch of people like, you guys shouldn't even cover this show because you haven't seen the Rebels and the Clone Wars, and you're going to have nothing new or interesting to say. There's other people saying you should watch it anyway. We just want, you know, we're in the same boat as you. So it's like I'm going along and I'm talking about this show. And here's the thing: I like this show. I really like Ahsoka. I really like Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka. And I don't know, I saw Alan Sepinwall's thing. It's like he thought this is really competently made television, but he wondered if anyone who hadn't seen Clone Wars and Rebels would get anything out of it or would make any emotional connection. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know if I agree with that because here's the thing. I've been thinking, this isn't the first time I've like watched something that was a sequel to something or a prequel to something that I didn't have the right, you know. And I've also seen a lot of sequels and prequels to franchises I'm very intimately familiar with. And I've been thinking about it in my mind this whole week. It's like, well, how, like, you know, I was thinking about like Dead of Honor. It's this Tom Clancy prequel featuring a very central Tom Clancy character and the Jack Ryan universe. And I was thinking, it's like, you know, does it just throw you into the middle and you kind of assume? No, it always has, you know, like a hook that you can understand, even if this is the first book you've picked up out of series. That's always the challenge for people making these big things, is like, you can't assume everyone's a fan. And I feel like that I don't know all of the backstory, but I see a person who I thought actually on first watch was her brother. I thought the guy that's gone. Yeah, the Ezra was Sabine's brother.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just realized that they were really good friends, maybe even heading towards romantic friends in a YA kind of way. I don't know, but that intense connection. Her and Ahsoka both went to go find her or find him. At some point, they gave up for some reason, and there's bad blood over that. Like, I felt like these are all archetypal enough that I instantly kind of plugged into, and I thought the villains were appealing. I don't know their names. I'm calling one Darth Swanson. I'm calling the other one Darth.
That's Balon.
Darth Grimes, because okay. She looks just like when Elon Musk's wife left him and just started wandering the streets of San Francisco reading Marx. Do you remember those?
Did you remember those pictures coming out? Follow him during
the hood
that
and everything. So nice. I love Darth Swanson. Was gutted to find out this guy died. They had no idea that the guy who's the head bad guy died in May.
Ray Stevenson?
Yeah, oh. That's for our friend Ray at the end. I had no idea.
That makes sense now. Damn.
And I'd seen him in something recently. We both watched the movie RRR this winter, and he's the evil governor.
Okay.
In that one, he was a Blackbeard in Black Sails. This is a big breakout role for him, and he died at 58.
God, that sucks. Because I really liked him in this.
A great screen presence. Now, I want to know what you think, and I want to talk about Dave Filoni and how we feel about him. Because, like I said, my general impression is positive. I think that if you obviously are Rebels, Clone Wars fans, this is probably like crack to you. I can't imagine being unhappy with it. But as a person who is very fleetingly familiar with those characters, I thought this feels like Star Wars. Exciting. There's a mystery. What did you think?
I probably have a few more complaints than you do about this show, but overall, I was pretty pleased by it. I think, you know, the whole Steppenwolf review of it all, like, do I need to be familiar with Rebels and Clone Wars in order to enjoy this show? I think the answer is a full-throated no. I think this show stood extremely well on its own legs, introducing me as someone who hasn't seen Rebels to Sabine went really well. I feel like they did everything they needed to do with Ezra and the memory of him to set this up. I guess I don't know his final disposition, and that was slightly confusing. Like, is he alive? Is he definitely dead? Or is he just lost?
MIA.
It seems like, yeah, he's MIA because, you know, there's hope that they could find him.
That was like slightly confusing. Star Destroyer fleeing with Grand Admiral Thrawn aboard. The result of this titanic battle, my understanding is Thrawn warped out of the system with Ezra stuck on a Star Destroyer, so he's missing, but as time has gone on, like,
and none
everyone
of this
presumes
is in
Thrawn's
the show.
Dead. Yeah, none of this is in the show. This is just stuff I did a little bit of, like, digging.
Is Ahsoka says, we might be able to find Ezra with this map or whatever.
Yeah.
So I assume he's still out there potentially. I think they did a great job with that. I like Sabine as a character. She does some stupid things in this episode, and I think it's a testament of how well they've kind of outlined that character for a new viewer like me, that I don't hate her immediately because she does some colossally stupid shit. But I still ended up liking her.
Because she's hurt. She feels betrayed.
Uh-huh.
And like it helps. Like I thought they did a really good job of having the conversations on both sides, where like they're both slowly realizing, like, maybe I was not fair to this person.
Yeah, right.
And you know,
you've got Hera and David Tennant. I love David Tennant as this droid. I forget his name. Hu Yang.
Yeah.
Then through both sides of that
5,000-year-old lightsaber architect.
Sure, teaching younglings in the Jedi Temple or the Jedi headquarters, whatever.
I thought the three women, the three central characters, Ahsoka, Sabine, and Hera, were just all really well sketched out.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, I know enough about Clone Wars because I watched a little bit of this with Jack. I watched all of the Gennady Tarkov. Is that his name? We were big fans of that, the Clone Wars, like, anime style, and then they did the 3D animation where Dave Filoni took over. I forget why, but we just kind of stopped watching that at some point. But like Ahsoka, in my mind, was always just very impetuous. You know, she's very much an Anakin for Anakin, right? And I was just kind of blown away by how, like, very confident and self-possessed that this version of Ahsoka is, and how kind of like Rosario Dawson's crushing it. I can't believe how real her head tails look.
they do a good job on the costume.
And I was thinking,
sure,
like, because she does a lot of, like, she crosses her arms and she does, and I'm like, God, how much costume testing did they have to do? Or do they just, like, by process elimination, when she does something that makes the tails look weird, they're like, well, you can't do that anymore. But I'm amazed at how well they're able to move and do some of the stunt work, and I really like that fight between the masked Sith Inquisitor and Ahsoka.
So I'm kind of the perfect litmus test for whether or not the show can stand on its own, because I haven't seen any of that stuff. I haven't seen a single episode of Clone Wars, not a single episode of Rebels. I don't know Sabine from a hole in the wall. So coming into this fresh, I felt like they did a really good job just throwing me into her story, and I felt like I got caught up on the important bits, right? She used to be Ahsoka's apprentice, and for some reason Ahsoka just said, I'm not training you. Seems like she was a real handful and still is a real handful, and she just wasn't quote unquote ready, right, in the Yoda Obi-Wan discussion kind of way. Over Luke. So I get all that stuff, and they did a really good job with that. And I think it's super important because there are a lot of people, I imagine, out there like me who, you know, just didn't take the time to watch the animated series. I think there is a demarcation between people who are willing to watch live action and people who are willing to engage in all of it. And yeah. I fall on one side of that with, I think, a bunch of other people.
Yeah, I mean, if at the end of the day, I guess this is for like Gen X elder millennials who also don't want to fuck with the cartoons, but also are kind of here for the live action kind of ride of it. And there are definitely flaws. I think there's flaws in adaptation. I think there's flaws in Filoni being a little too precious about his own material. I thought the trailer looked impressive. I was kind of sold when I saw Darth Swanson. I'm like, oh, that guy looks fucking cool. And yeah, he gave me like Joris Kabaoth vibes. And that's the big, if you are a big Rebels Clone Wars fan and you haven't read the Expanded Universe, you might be irritated by this take. But on the other hand, if you're an Expanded Universe fan who's not familiar with the Filoni's part of it, I'm of two minds of Dave Filoni, because if I squint and I look with one eye, he looks like a man who really loves Star Wars, understands the tone, the setting, and what it needs to be, and is like a very confident set of hands that you can put Star Wars future into. But I squint and look at another eye, and I like, this guy's the Carrion Lord of the necrotic EU, where he just picks the best characters and the best designs, and the best morsels and the best plot points and the things that he personally doesn't like about a backstory or an introduction. He'll sand that off and he just throws it out there. And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, when you're talking about Heir to the Empire and Grand Admiral Thrawn, that's a whole fucking series that I read and had my mind blown when I was a teenager. And I'm not so sure that what he's going to come up with is going to be better than him just kind of like riffing and playing DJ.
You know, that's his charge as the head of this Star Wars, the new Star Wars canon. That's what he's doing. That's what he's got to do.
I would, and I think that there's probably a dividing line, like somewhere around your mid 30s where you were totally on board with that plan. But maybe I'm on an island. I just think that I feel like the EU got fucked. Like, Disney's like, we're going to throw it all away because we don't care about continuity. And now it's like they're just cherry picking the best stuff. But it's like, I don't know, man. I'm trying to think of I can't think of a because I don't think it's ever been done like this before. But like, it just feels weird where like I'm seeing a telephone game of my favorite story being played. Like, well, that's not how what happened in Heir to the Empire. But I'm not holding that against the show. It's just one of those things where it's like I'm a little raw about the time and attention I have spent into the EU, only to have it thrown away. But now only I'm going to be lectured by 25-year-old fans that I don't understand the nuances of Admiral Thrawn's history. And that's just a bizarre place to be. Mm-hmm. That's a bizarre place to be for me as a Star Wars fan. So I hope you guys will bear with me. And like I said, you can send in corrections, or if you've got the inside info, on the weird wolf crap that Dave Filoni gets up to, too. That's another thing I'm not so sure about. He's trying to build this kind of like animism into Star Wars.
So I have some major complaints with these first two episodes and seemingly with what's going to be the rest of the Ahsoka series, the direction they're taking it, both narratively and visually and tonally, that I don't like, that doesn't feel Star Wars to me, but we'll talk about it when we get there. I also have some complaints about the filmmaking here.
Okay.
And maybe we can start getting into the recap to get to that stuff, because it's going to be a long episode.
Do you feel, because you didn't really chime in, do you feel beyond that EU stuff? Kind of like, this feels like...
Well, I'm not like, super familiar with the Heir to the Empire trilogy. I want to say I read that first book, but it's been 30 years ago at this point, so I don't remember a damn thing from them.
I thought you were all in on that early, because I've read every bit of the EU up until like halfway through the Yuuzhan Vong, which
I read a lot of while you were reading Heir to the Empire. I'm 5-6 years younger than you. While you were reading Heir to the Empire, I was reading the Jedi Academy trilogy. So I remember that a lot better than the Heir to the Empire stuff. I read like Tales of the Bounty Hunters. I read some of the Corellia books.
Were you familiar with like the Witches of Dathomir? Did you read that, Stan?
No.
Was that the Courtship of Princess Leia that was they got introduced into? But that's what I'm saying. Like, a lot of this stuff is ringing huge bells, and I like it, but it's like, but I can't assume that any of my knowledge is actually good. It works the other way, because I got into, again, I don't know much about Rebels, anything about Rebels, But I understand that it's kind of controversial within Rebels fans that Sabine Wren is a Jedi, or is becoming a Jedi Padawan.
Really?
That, like, Ahsoka was training her, like, the idea of, like, I'm going to turn you from an unfocused Mandalorian into a warrior of peace. Like, I'm going to give you some Jedi training in combat and some Jedi training in diplomacy and politics and people skills. But the idea she was, like, a Padawan, or that she had Force sensitivity, or that she was going to pick up a lightsaber one day, and that's, like, a lot of people are like, what the... Where did this come from?
Huh. Okay.
So... But to
so
me,
we can
like,
disappoint
I,
everyone here. Yeah.
Right. To me, it's like I came in and was like, well, that makes perfect sense. They had a Padawan thing. The Jedi Order threw apart. There was a civil war. They got broken up. Things got in the way. They both have a feeling. I didn't have any hackles raised against that.
And
so,
how cool is it to have a Mandalorian Jedi? You know, I think that's awesome.
I would submit pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, equal opportunity disappointment here on Ahsoka. Let's get into the recap of episode one. We're not interested in Jedi protocol. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
For Prestige, me and Aaron are still extending our Shogun Afterglow with part three of our discussion of the 1980s TV miniseries. Last week absolutely shocked our sensibilities with Lord Toranaga doing the tango. What delights and horrors will await us this week?
Then for Pulp, this Friday join us for our latest prep session for House of the Dragon Season 2 as we take another look at the key differences between the text of Fire and Blood the on-screen action for season one, and what they mean for the characters, story, and setting. Get your Valyrian steel sharpened for the new season.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. It's time for your training, Padawan. Here's more Tribe of Two. We get a crawl, standard Star Wars crawl. The New Republic has been established after the defeat of the Empire, but behind the scenes, the remaining Imperial remnants are trying to find Grand Admiral Thrawn to start another war. And Ahsoka is off looking for the map to where Thrawn is hiding, as her prisoner, Morgan Elsbeth, is being transported to the New Republic for trial. I assume Morgan Elsbeth is a big character in Star Wars lore, but I don't know because I've not seen stuff.
She might be a rebel character. It does seem like they're hinting that she is a witch of Dathomir, which I can tell you about if you want.
For sure. Yeah, I'd love to hear about that stuff later when we get to that part. So a New Republic ship is waiting for a rendezvous with another ship that we'll come to know as Home One. But some Sith show up first and masquerade as Jedi long enough to break Morgan out of the brig, and they realize they have to go after Ahsoka because she's onto the map. This is a very Star Wars intro, very Star Wars, from, you know, the ship being sort of introduced into frame from one side of it, hovering over the top of it, to Darth Vader strolling down the halls of the Tantive IV, to like a breakout of a prisoner in the Leia stuff. All of this feels very Star Wars.
Yeah, I was trying to think of other ways. Like, if, like, you know, if this is the other way to evaluate this is not like if I knew this is a sequel or a prequel, but like if I'm going in this, I didn't even know. Like, this is a scene. It's great. It's disconnected. I don't know who any of these people are. It's very recognizable with Star Wars. It's cool.
Very
and
cool.
Then like get the next scene is Ahsoka essentially like doing an Indiana Jones routine, which is essentially like an Indiana Jones movie. It opens up with her doing
like a pauper's version of it. I want to talk about that specifically in reference to Raiders.
What I'm getting at is that they did do, I think, a good job of like easing you in rather than just piling on all these relationships and stuff. And it's so weird for I felt like I don't know, maybe he was writing defensively. Like, I really like this show, but I could see where people that haven't seen like 7 years worth of television would be left cold by it. But yeah, I didn't have any problems with that. And I immediately liked both of these two Sith figures, or I don't think they're Sith, but
I'm calling Jedi. Them Sith, but yeah, they're former Jedi, fallen Jedi. I don't know what they want to be
called. She's still keeping the Padawan, like she's got the Padawan braid. He calls her Padawan.
They're Sith to me. Evil Jedi or Sith. That's just...
He's got red lightsabers. That's just science. But
we'll talk about that later, too.
And I
like
the
music in this scene, too. They have a very Star Wars soundtrack, but there's like a bit of a piano mixed in there with some sort of minor chords, and it's really good.
And I like the captain. I thought he appears as smart, that he's not like a fool, but, you know, it's like he's like, there's no way these are just some Imperials playing. But what he didn't expect is there to be evil Jedi, you know?
Right. Jedi powers misused. It's good stuff.
And again, like I said, I know too much, but like if you hear about this Grand Admiral, he's the last of the Grand Admirals. He could rekindle hope of a fallen empire. Like, hell of a MacGuffin. Got this witch lady in a prison that knows there's a map that finds him. I'm in.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the second scene here, where for me, the wheels turn into squares and it's some pretty rough road. Ahsoka visits an ancient temple where she listens to voices which guide her through a puzzle that results in her finding a spherical star map. This scene is so fucking boring. And in fact, every scene that involves this map is boring beyond comprehension. I look at this scene takes 10 minutes to resolve. And it is literally nothing but Ahsoka looking at sculpts in a wall, lines on a floor, pillars in a chamber, and I'm trying to like follow it. What am I supposed to be understanding here? Can I solve this puzzle along with her? And the answer is absolutely not. Zero chance of figuring out this puzzle alongside her. Whereas I look at the first 10 minutes of Raiders of Lost Ark is essentially doing the same thing. You're going into the temple, you're getting the idol, you're getting out, and you're fighting your way out of that.
And you're getting immediately accosted by your rival who's going to steal your shit and set off the rest, you know.
But look at the entertainment disparity between the two. Raiders of the Lost Ark is incredible in its first 10 minutes. It tells you everything you need to know about Indiana Jones, and it does it in an extremely entertaining fashion. This is fucking boring.
You're not wrong. I think you're being a little harsh, because what the difference is like, I think they could have done that, but you needed, like, Indiana Jones wasn't just walking through a tomb considering things. He was like, you can't step on this, and if you do, boom, a thing shoots out and almost kills a guy. This is what happens, and you get covered in spiders, and he's finally, but then he sees like a sharp.
You've got,
you get this idea that any step could kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the thing here, it's like you just felt like anyone could come in and traipse all over this place. And like you had to do certain things for something right to go, but nothing could go wrong. And it is a little bit boring. Like I don't know. Like I thought I saw what she was doing. She's rotating these stone columns and making them be level and all that. But it's like there wasn't an element of danger until the droid showed up. And I think if they had suggested that there was like maybe some traps, I thought it was super nifty how she like cut her way into the tomb.
Apparently that's an Ahsoka trademarked move, I guess.
Really? It looks cool in live action. I just wish that they had either gotten, like, it would have been cool as like if she'd established that this is a tunnel full of traps, and then she just kind of gets a wry look on her face and like walks 500 feet over ground and it cuts in and gets all the way to the end, and then you can see this like death trap that she avoided. That'd have been
that
funny.
Could be fun.
Either way, you just have to goose the scene. This
they
scene
needed
should
to
have
do
been
something.
Half as long as it should have been if you aren't going to actually inhabit this boring room with character and put some menace and stuff into it.
Either a quarter of the length or four times the entertainment, because this was boring to me.
And the other thing is like it's a little bit of map room of Indiana Jones, but the thing of the map room is that was built, the whole first third of the movie was building to that.
Yeah.
And the music and the staff and again the sun's coming up, and it's like you're just like, where, you know, there, none of that was there. And they it could have. I don't know.
And I don't know what you think of this scene, I guess, if you haven't seen any of the other live action stuff, which, you know, I want to give them a little bit more and say, well, Ahsoka's been in other stuff that's live action. Mm-hmm. So probably a lot of people will have seen that stuff. But yeah, I don't know what you make of it without that, because this is a bad character introduction, I would say.
I don't know about that, because I thought that they, in this scene, like, they really, like, she's calm, she's regal, she's self-possessed, she's confident. These five serious combat droids are no threat to her whatsoever. I felt like even if you didn't know who Ahsoka was, you'd have a very strong idea of who she is, especially if you know Jedi as an archetype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably fair.
The self-destruct these droids are out of control. Okay.
I haven't really introduced it yet. She goes to leave the temple. She's confronted by five droids who demand she give them the map, and she fights them off, manages to flee on her ship as the entire temple explodes behind her. Then she gets a message from Home One saying there's been an incident. Yeah, let's talk about this fight. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know, Jedi on droid fights, I think, are always a little kind of a bummer, because they're not nearly, you know, like I said, give me Ahsoka's fighting the mask warrior Martok or whatever in the second episode. But it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I like how she used that move where she cuts through the stone to kind of divide and conquer here. That was cool.
Even the odds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we'll say after she, you know, fights her way out and you get the explosion. can we talk about Ahsoka's force abilities? She does some cool stuff, but I think she's the slowest Jedi in the galaxy. That's what I'm going to call her.
I have in my notes, did Anakin not teach her how to force run? Or right. Did Obi-Wan not teach Anakin? That's the other thing, because like there's at least 3 points in these 2 hours that I watched where Ahsoka could have significantly improved her odds if she could just locomote faster than an average human being.
I thought this was a standard Jedi power. I really did.
Mouse,
I mean,
on
I guess
the Marvel
Luke
side,
never does it.
The mouse on the Marvel side is really good at making humans look like they can run superhumanly fast. Like the Phantom Menace is kind of like jank, but hook her
it
up to the
fine.
Fucking Steve Rogers machine. Hook her up to the Black Panther machine. Get her running 70, 80 miles an hour. That would be fucking
all
cool.
All you gotta do is blur the background behind her. Looks great.
Do you know how they actually do that?
No.
They have like what do they call those wires that you slide on? Zipline.
Oh.
They have like a steel zipline where the actor is going to run, and then they put him on a harness that he can like freely zip align that, and it's kind of got like a little bit of an elastic bounce, and then they have a vehicle that tows him at the correct speed, and then you timing like your feet hitting the ground, and it looks like gives you that natural like 30 yard bound that you it's really cool. It's really
cool.
They
could have done that with the Jedi here.
Master Yard of fast running. They need to Marvel needs to share that technology with Disney.
Yeah, or maybe they're making a point. She is just literally the slowest Jedi in the galaxy.
Could be that Anakin forgot to teach her how to force run.
That's her new moniker. I really like David Tennant. Sorry.
As I said, these droids, the detonation systems are just out of control. Like, oh my, five of these droids destroyed a continent. It's insane.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, the power sources on them must last a while, be powerful. Let's talk about more droids. Hu Yang, as David Tennant playing Hu Yang. I really like him. He brings that sort of sly, cheeky tone to the droid, which I really love.
Can I say something I don't like about him?
His head.
And this is the adaptation part of it.
Oh.
It bothers me that I feel like you can put droids in a lineup and I think I could with 95% accuracy point out the ones that originated from Rebels and Clone Wars and which ones originated from the actual movies. There's a certain little bit more art deco smooth style to these droids, and I feel like they just should have either I don't know, they don't look, they look like it looks, it gives me a little Roger Rabbit vibes. I feel like I'm watching a cartoon character interact with real people.
Gotcha. Yeah, I feel like there are a couple things that are off in that regard, just art direction wise.
He's too smooth. Like, he should have more greeblies and rivets and stuff. And if he was actually if he was built by ILM and not just designed in AutoCAD or whatever, the 3D light blender, whatever the fuck they're using, he would. But like, they should have done that. They should have like given, they should have, I don't know. I feel like someone should have built that out of sheet metal and then 3D rendered that instead of just taking the design from the cartoon, because he looks like a cartoon character.
I'm with you. Do you think his head's shaped that way because he's Ahsoka's droid? Because he almost has like the two tentacle things.
That would bother me
got.
Since he's supposed to be 25,000 years old, but
oh,
I don't know.
Right, true. She had his head replaced with one that she was more comfortable with. We also find out that Ahsoka does not always adhere to standard Jedi protocol, which I want to say we kind of already knew. We had seen the Mandalorian or Book of Boba Fett stuff.
Yeah, and Yang's already beating the drum. You need a Padawan. That's a Padawan's job. I'm not a Padawan.
Mm-hmm. When they reach Home One, they see the damage done to the other ship by what I'm calling the Sith. We meet General Hera Syndulla, who tells Ahsoka that they lost the prisoner and then briefs her on the Sith. Ahsoka's not familiar with the Sith, so she has Hu Yang run a match on their lightsabers. And she shows Hera the star map, but it's locked, so they can't use it. And Hera says, well, why don't you take it to Ahsoka? And she seems pretty reluctant to do that.
Yeah, really impressive shot of the Rebel fleet. Always love to see Mon Cal Cruiser up close. I thought Mary Elizabeth Winstead did a great job. General Syndulla, I thought, was immediately sketched out. I don't know if that's always her position, because it seems like they're telling me that Ahsoka and Sabine are both a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're both very stubborn, pig-headed, independent, strongly held beliefs and thoughts. And it seems like that general is Syndulla is like kind of like their mediary. She's kind of like their interface. I don't know if that's always true of them, but like, I easily could see that's a dynamic that they would have, and it felt good. I thought I instantly liked these characters.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I found it interesting that they can do matches on lightsabers, but I guess that makes a lot of sense. If you just catalog them, they have a little trouble with it here because of the recording. It's not perfect, but cool concept. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this guy's really been around for 25,000 years. He probably has like firsthand knowledge of all these. And he's this lightsaber architect too.
Uh-huh, yeah. So then we go over to an official dedication ceremony for a monument to Ezra Bridger. Sabine Wren is introduced to speak, but she's not in attendance. And so they go searching for her and find her blasting away from the city on her speeder. They try and stop her, but she evades them and continues on.
Yep, she's doing a James T. Kirk patented running from authorities at full speed, full blast music.
Blasting rock music, yeah.
Some kind of J-pop, J-rock from a galaxy far, far away is what she's listening to.
Yeah, I want to say this is not a popular song, but I'm not into popular
it
music lately,
be.
So
if this
I don't
is actually
really know.
A pop, if they licensed a pop song, if they ever licensed a pop song in Star Wars, that's the day.
I feel like it's
burning
coming,
my
man.
Lightsaber and burning my Wookiee suit. I just, no. No!
I feel like you're going to get a Taylor Swift song maybe next season of Ahsoka.
Anyway. Clancy Brown!
Yeah, Brown shows up.
Love seeing Clancy Brown.
I assume as her father, the way they interact later, I think he's Sabine's father.
Oh, I didn't get that. I just got that he's the governor, so... But,
he could also just be like an authority figure who's kind of over her shit, but cares about her. I felt like, a
and she's
thing.
Important. She's a Luke Skywalker equivalent. Like all these, everybody in that fucking mural, I gather, is like you have to take as seriously as we would take, a Leia, a Luke, or a Han.
They're heroes of the rebellion,
right? And I like that. I will say that here's another thing about the design and the adaptation of it. I hate that this mural looks like a Rebels poster.
Really?
This is the Roger Rabbit bullshit I'm talking about.
What, like, style would you want it to have? Like more of a graffiti kind of look, or?
I guess, I don't know. I've never seen this style of art in Star Wars before. I don't know why they wouldn't just make like a statue that looks like real, like, you know, I see Sabine's right fucking there and she doesn't look like her picture.
Yeah,
she looks like a cartoon character.
I was bothered by the hair color on Sabine, and I'm like, okay, she's cutting her hair later. We'll see that. But they don't do the top of it white like they should.
Yeah.
They just leave it brown and purple.
It's just weird. It's like they know that they, like, these are humans and they can't adapt it that way. It's like, you know, Rosario, they could, even though they're not, make Rosario Dawson's eyes look 300% bigger. So she's got those huge, ridiculous anime eyes that Ahsoka's got in cartoons. They don't, because they're like, that would look stupid. I think, I don't know, maybe if you're a fan of Rebels, that's like, but like to me, it's like seeing Roger Rabbit walk out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it's just it jarred me.
I mean, they're definitely playing to Rebels fans here. Even in the previous scene where Hera's like, you need to take this to Sabine, or, you know who you need to take this to. She'll do it for Ezra. I mean, right there, Rebels fans are probably like, fuck yeah, she'll do it for Ezra. Mm-hmm. Whereas for me, that's all teasing who this person is. And I think it works on both levels.
Right.
And I didn't have a problem with the mural. I just thought, it's the style of the mural. But you're right, it's not very Star Wars-y style, and I have some complaints around that later, but we'll get there.
Have we ever seen these E-Wings in any other canon before? And I'm trying to think where I've seen E-Wings before. Were they in the Star Wars X-Wing versus TIE Fighter? Were they first? Because I've seen these before.
I don't recall.
Were they like a role-playing game, a vehicle addendum?
Maybe.
I don't know. But I thought they look pretty cool.
Yeah, not bad. I like the T-6 as well. That's Ahsoka's ship. Really cool looking.
I wasn't sold on it until it landed and did that rotation thing. And I'm like, I'd love a transforming ship. I kind of fell in love with it then.
You
but
weren't
I was
sold on
like,
it when you realized how hard they were aping Foundation?
There's like this.
Holy shit.
Because sometimes it's hot and cold. Like Slave One, I think, is really cool. Like, you know, that kind of vertical stack ship. But it's weird in Star Wars. It always strikes me as something that. But like, I do like the way it kind of rotates around. It's that. Yeah.
You got the B wings? Those have always been an interesting semi vertical shape.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. There's precedent for it. And I just think it looks cool. I like that ship. Sabine goes home and reminisces over a holo message from Ezra. He says he's counting on her. This is a recording, by the way. He says he's counting on her to see things through, and then signs off with "May the Force be with you." There's got to be some guilt that she's not following that path that he kind of saw her going down. And this is a really good scene. You know, this starts to really establish the motivations of this character. Like, why isn't she at this ceremony? Well, it's a ceremony for this monument to Ezra, who she misses desperately and probably maybe even feels some guilt around it.
Yeah, he's still out there, but like me and Ahsoka have split up and haven't gotten there's a little bit of because a lot of people, I saw some complaints about, like, you know, what a wet blanket, what an unpleasant character she is. But I'm like, yeah, that's her character. She kind of hates herself right now.
She
doesn't like herself. She's not herself.
Mm-hmm. And I think they do a really good job telling that story. It's first they introduce
she's immature
me to her. Yes, and she is very much immature. Uh-huh. They do a great job of that. And there's some interesting things happening here in her apartment at this watchtower, I guess. She's got a stormtrooper helmet collection, which I thought was interesting. I don't know if these are like the Wookiee pelts for Boba Fett,
yeah.
But yeah, keeping trophies. She's got these drawings on the wall of her pet. I don't know the name of her pet or the species of her
either,
pet.
I don't either, but it's fucking adorable.
Yeah. It's like a cat with chicken legs.
But with the like those munchkin cat proportions, you know? Uh-huh. They're kind of like a little bit of cute and squishier.
Totally.
With chicken legs, yeah. A basilisk cat.
But these drawings on the wall are going to connect later, and tell you a little bit about the relationship that her and Ahsoka used to have, which I think is cool. So then Morgan and the Sith go to the temple where Ahsoka found the map, and they realize that she has it. So of course they decide to go after her. Morgan sends the apprentice to Lothal to search for Sabine Wren, Ahsoka's former apprentice. Here's the mention of the Night Sisters of Dathomir, which are witches. Do you want to clue some people in?
Yeah,
because
that guy, I don't know if they'll. Yeah, why not? There's this. They were introduced in this one book. I think it was the Courtship of Princess Leia. Maybe it was something else. But you know, they start exploring in the EU after a few years the idea that the Force isn't like just understood by the Jedi and the Sith. There's like tons of independent Force traditions because the Force is a universal thing throughout the galaxy, and lots of different cultures understood it and approached it different ways. And you got these on this planet Dathomir, they called them witches, these Night Sisters that were able to harness the Force. I think they have like this elaborate system of tattoos in their body. It's a lot of like, it felt like there's a lot of tribal, aboriginal, indigenous influences on this culture, and they're kind of like all like very animistic, shamanistic understanding of it. And they, one of the cool thing is they rode rancors into battle.
That's,
and there's
sweet.
One really memorable scene where they had captured Han Solo and they're interrogating him, and one of the head witches was threatening to break every bone in his body individually. And I think she started with like his tibia, and he's in his thoughts. He's like, you know, it's like, God damn, this really hurts. And he's like frantic to try to think of it. He goes, well, you surely don't mean my teeth, right? And then just as soon as he says it, the one of the witches pops one of his molars. He's like, oh God, why did I give them my, I just remember that being both very dark, a way to torture someone, and like Han Solo being Han Solo, very funny. Mm-hmm. But if I recall correctly, one of the witches made it into Luke's Jedi Academy.
Potentially, yeah. I'm vaguely familiar with this. And it's...
So, I'm wondering what kind of remixing he's doing. Because he also mentions, like, a civilization from outside the galaxy, which means a certain thing if you're an EU fan. And I'm wondering if they're, like, are they mixing up the Vong with the... the witches of Dathomir to kind of like blend them into, but that's weird because the Yuuzhan and Vong's whole deal is they were not Force attuned at all, because they're extragalactic. I don't know. I'm curious to see how they're gonna, you know, kind of just square all that, or exactly how Filoni's gonna adapt that material.
Yeah, we'll see.
Beware the Sith. We will return.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of King's Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you hearing voices too? Welcome back to Tribe of Two.
There are some apparent powers here that Morgan has. She seems to just know to send I'm the person I'm calling the apprentice, the younger of the two Sith Jedi fallen whatever. She kind of just seems to know to send her to Lothal. And I don't know if that's because she's familiar with Ahsoka and Sabine's relationship and she thinks that that's a lead, or if it's more like mystical, because there are definitely some more mystical things that happen later.
That's what Darth Swanson seems to say. He goes, this isn't witchcraft, this is just the home planet of her apprentice,
right?
This masked Sith warrior that we'll see more of in next episode, he's 100% Ezra, right?
I hadn't even thought of it.
Seriously?
No.
Oh, man. The second I saw this guy wearing a young, tall, Force-sensitive
in a full face
Sith warrior in a full face covering that he never takes off under any circumstances. Like, that's, and you're missing a person. It's and it's connected with Thrawn. It's got to be Ezra.
This is Pedro Pascal, who.
Man, what has he got over to Mouse that is giving him checks he doesn't have to show up for? He doesn't have to go. He doesn't even step in the booth for this one.
Nope, not
just
a single word.
Cash the check.
Yeah, you could be right. This could be Ezra. I don't know. Boy, I wonder if that's being speculated hardcore about.
Has to be.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, Sabine wakes from an Ezra dream to find Ahsoka headed into the city. Overhead, and she goes in to meet her. There's some awkward tension until Ahsoka says that she might know how to find Ezra and hands her the star map. This is where we find out that Ezra is probably not dead, or potentially not dead. He might just be missing. And this is the scene where Clancy Brown has some affection or a deeper relationship than just like dignitary and hero of the rebellion. There's some kind of like annoyed disappointment on a personal level here that she wasn't around and she's not taking things seriously.
You might be right. I didn't pick up on it though.
I guess I could have looked it up, but I kind of don't want to look up too much about this show because I want to retain, you know, my, I guess, naivete.
Right. Yeah, in fact, I kind of regret. I watched this 35-minute video that kind of compressed all of the Clone Wars, and it was designed specifically for this thing. And I'm like, man, I just wish I'd gone in blind, totally blind, you know, or as blind as I was.
Yeah, I just want to see what the show can put down. Like, how's it gonna work on its own?
I did like them having to like a barb off on who's more difficult. That's always gives you an interesting insight into both characters, right?
Sure.
And Ahsoka's kind of ice cold, where she's like, well, there's nothing easy about being a Jedi. And, you know, they're still barbing off. And she says, well, that I should have been a good one. And Ahsoka's like, yeah, you should have. Like, that's fucking cold, man.
Yeah, going pretty hard on each other. Then they go back to Ahsoka's ship, and she asks Sabine to figure out how to unlock the map. She shows Sabine a scan of the temple that she found it in, and they talk a bit about their past as master and apprentice. Sabine asks if she can take the map somewhere that she can think more clearly in, and Ahsoka says absolutely not. Here, when you get Sabine kind of walking into Ahsoka's ship, she takes a look at what is apparently her old bunk, because it has the drawings of her pet, in the same style as the ones we saw in her little apartment last time.
Yeah. Because she's the artist. Cool. They also established that she's an artist.
Yeah, and they don't need to, you know, talk about their former relationship. We can kind of just know, oh, they used to travel together until pretty recently.
Okay. Yeah, that tracks.
How unoriginal is it for the witches of Dathomir to live on a planet called Arcana?
What? I don't get it. I thought they came from the planet Dathomir, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe Dathomir is a concept.
Maybe.
The witches of Dathomir, it's like, I don't know, the employees of 7-Eleven.
It feels like they're adapting the witches into some kind of like sect in exile, similar to the Mandalorians, because she's like, are you a witch? No, I'm a survivor. That's not the case. In fact, I don't think the Republic knew about the witches of Dathomir until this novel that I read, that it had to take place at least 5 years after the Battle of Yavin, if not more. So it's like, again, this is like I'm saying, it's like going back to your childhood home, but you've grown 3 feet. Like nothing... This is familiar, but also very strange and doesn't seem to fit. So I'm just like, okay, they're force sensitive, female Sith or force users, and just looks like they've, you know, been on the run for a while. Grand Admiral Thrawn, their key to resurgence, seems to be the key to at least three people's resurgences. These Jedi mercenary, dark Jedi mercenary, the Sith, the witches of Dathomir, and the Empire, all riding on Thrawn's return. So I get that.
Yeah. It's a lot to shoulder. We'll see how big his shoulders are. Another thing that they kind of are teasing here with their former relationship is something that it seems like Ahsoka was not willing to do for Sabine, because she asks her like, oh, you're living on the ship still, huh? And Ahsoka's like, yeah, I go where I'm needed. And her response is not always. Which to me implies some way in which Ahsoka let down Sabine.
So Rebels fans, tell me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is the way Rebels left, that Ahsoka and Sabine were going to team up to try to find where Ezra had gone.
Ah, that makes sense.
And then now this is the first that we're revisiting it. So I think the implication is that maybe Sabine didn't want to give up looking, and Ahsoka hit dead end at dead end, and there's like, there's other people I could be helping, and they just...
That would make sense.
So like she thinks Ahsoka... Yeah, so it's like that's... But again, I could be wrong. Maybe there was a season of them looking for Ezra, but my understanding, that's kind of where the Rebels plot the ended up.
Okay.
I had some people like, well, this is basically Rebel Season 8. I don't agree with that. If this is Rebel Season 8, they should have called it Rebel Season 8, and then I would have known not to watch it. They're calling this Ahsoka, which means it should be a good entry point for people that are not familiar with the series to jump on. And so far, it's been that way. But I wouldn't say that this is Season 8 of Rebels.
Yeah. Let's go over to Hu Yang, saying he figured out that the lightsabers of the Sith were designed just like the ones he used to build with the students at the Jedi Temple. One is unfamiliar, but the other belongs to Baylon Skull, a Jedi that disappeared at the end of the Clone Wars. Ahsoka thinks it's probably a master-apprentice situation here with the two, and then she discovers that Sabine is gone with the map.
Yeah, it's like, we used to have this term called Dark Jedi, right? You know, they're not a Sith, but they've fallen away from the ideals of the Jedi.
Sure.
It's I think it's cool. I'm really looking for, because there is a nobility to this guy. There is there's like a tragic quality to him.
To Baylan?
Yeah, I think so.
The stronger vibe I'm getting is very mercenary.
That's what he calls himself. Like, I'm essentially mercenary Jedi.
Yeah, like, I'm paid well, right? I think is what he says. I don't know exactly what he wants, though. I'm not sure if he wants to find Grand Admiral Thrawn, or if he just wants to pay from it, or if he's looking for something else along this path.
It's the power, and I'm like, what is the unimaginable power?
Yeah.
That a Jedi, you know, that a dark Jedi might crave for himself, you know?
Yeah, where's it coming from? And I don't see it yet, but
I wonder if they're full-blown heir of the Empire-ing it. And if that's the case, and there's something besides Grand Admiral Thrawn waiting out there, then that makes a lot of sense.
I
don't want us to talk about that for fear of spoiling Rebels fans. And I don't even know what the hell Filoni would do with that heir to the Empire stuff. But like they fucking name-checked the series.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy Zahn's classic trilogy. The thing that, like, Star Wars... like, I can't explain to you guys how much Star Wars was dead. Like, Star Wars was omnipresent for like the first 10 years of my life. And then, it just kind of like went away.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't making video games anymore. There might have been a comic series. The toys were not in this market. It was dead. And then this Timothy Zahn Heir to the Empire trilogy came out and kind of single-handedly rebreathed life into the franchise, at least for my, like, that hit in like the seventh, eighth grade. And then it's like from that point forward, Star Wars became this big cultural thing. The re-releases came out, the video games came out, the prequels came out, and we've had from that moment on Star Wars forever. But yeah, there's a whole trilogy that they're pilfering, they're plundering for these characters and ideas, and I just don't know how they're going to adapt it.
Gotcha. Here's the thing about these lightsabers and Hu Yang's backstory, right? So he says that he basically helped the students at the Jedi Temple build their lightsabers, educated them in that way. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, it should be a red flag if a youngling wants to build a red lightsaber. Like, oh, if they go digging around in the red kyber drawer, it's probably time to call in Yoda or something. Be like, this gotten out of hand. We got a real.
It's like when a kid joins Slytherin in Harry Potter. It's like you're just gonna be bad. I don't know why we're training you. Honestly, we should just put you right into jail.
Honestly, why do we even have these red crystals here? Why do we have a drawer full of red crystals? It's
a trap.
It's a trap.
The kids that gravitate toward him, we just throw them in Sith prison. Just get them started early.
just kill them, because they're the bad ones. I assume you could swap out a kyber crystal if you wanted to. So the hilt, it makes sense that maybe he helped build this hilt, but then.
Man, I don't even know.
I don't even know.
I don't understand. I'm not sure what the current state of the art Star Wars lore is, but is it possible that the crystal gets corrupted by dark use of the Force?
It's totally possible. I don't know.
You start out the blue that shifts to red over time? Because, it seems like there's a lot of utility for a Force user to use a good guy's lightsaber if they wanted to, pass as good. I mean, it's too late for Palpatine. If you look like a monster man already, you're done. But this guy... sure. He could rock a light tan robe and a blue or green saber. You'd never know he was a Sith.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me wonder how Luke's sabers would have been two different colors. Like, wouldn't his father's saber have changed to a green if he was green? Or saber have been blue in Return of the Jedi if he was always blue?
It's
like
his dad's saber, and he only had it for two movies. So
it just takes a long time.
Not enough time to shift to the natural green color.
Yeah, I don't know the state of the art lore around that either.
I mean, I think it's all like whatever you can build at the Star Wars experience. So it's like, I think it's all kybers all the way down. Yeah.
Yeah. So Sabine goes home and is followed by the apprentice. She immediately starts trying to unlock the map. what is that shitty smile on her face after having betrayed her friend by stealing the map? She's really hard to like in this scene.
I mean, I don't know. She says her best friend is missing, and then her former master telling her that, hey, we're going to play it my way. Don't you worry. It's like, I don't know. Fuck Ahsoka. You abandon her friend. You don't care about her. You still don't care. You're more about the galaxy than our friend. And I think Sabine as a Mandalorian is very much the other way. I don't care mm-hmm. about the central government. I'm more concerned with her friend. So I understand why there's a lot of people that are not liking her, but I feel like all the things she does are not totally irrational, or it's part of her character, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's definitely part of her character. I just think she kind of sucks in this moment. She betrays someone that she should consider a friend, even if she's doing it because she really wants to find Ezra.
Well, I also think she thinks that Ahsoka has betrayed them as well. So it's like kind of turnabout. Yeah.
But look, taking this map is not going to help her, is not going to guarantee that she finds a way to unlock it. And if it does, it's just going to be a little bit faster than it would have been before because she can think more clearly. She's really taking a huge risk here in favor of doing it slightly faster. And that's what I don't like about it.
Well, and also, like, her qualifications for figuring this out is she's an artist. Like, she's not like an archaeological specialist on ancient force-sensitive civilizations. It's just like, Hera's like, well, you know, Sabine's always the artist. You ought to let her take a look at these scrawlings.
Was that really the excuse?
Yes, yes.
Oh, boy.
And what's really funny, it's like, it's one of these stupid things where, like, literally the encryption code was carved on the tomb floor.
Right, right.
So,
which if you didn't have that recording, I guess it wouldn't matter because it's destroyed.
Yeah, yeah. So. But I don't know. I think Filoni is like, God, what? Why? I need a reason for Ahsoka to come crawling back. She's an artist, and I'm gonna encrypt the thing on a fresco. Yeah, that's the ticket. That's the ticket.
Yeah, base all relief. That stuff feels super weak. Everything around this map, I really just hate everything to do with this map. I feel like it's not an interesting concept, but maybe it'll get us somewhere that's interesting. We'll see. Anyway,
the map is just a MacGuffin. Like, it's just.
But they spend so much time with it is the problem. Like, if it's just a MacGuffin, let's get it. Let's be on with our journey. But this feels like wallowing in something that isn't interesting.
Yeah.
Too many puzzles.
I mean, it's hard to recover from that first 10-minute scene, honestly. Yeah, I don't think you'd be saying this if that scene was paced better, but yeah, I
maybe not. Maybe not. So Ahsoka tells Hera that Sabine took the map. Hera says, no big deal. And then we find out that Sabine is a stubborn Mandalorian, but has more in common with Ahsoka as a Jedi apprentice than you might think. This is where we start to realize they're both kind of stubborn and... Ahsoka never finished her training with Anakin, I guess, because she was Anakin's apprentice before she left before the end of the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Why did Ahsoka walk away from Sabine? I don't know, but it could be what you hypothesized.
Yeah, she
earlier.
Feels abandoned by Anakin, of course.
Mm.
And it must sting to think that her Padawan thinks that she's abandoned her. Like, there's like, I could. There's a. And I thought this that what she said at the end, where sometimes you do things for the right reasons and they end up with wrong consequences. What do you do then? And it's like, well, just keep doing the right thing. You know, eventually.
Sure.
It's like, you know, good process can lead to bad and good outcomes. But if you have a bad outcome with a good process, that doesn't mean you go to a bad process. It just means you're just unlucky right. that time. But it sucks.
Yeah,
you deal
with the consequences.
The right.
And eventually things right themselves, right? You do the right thing consistently.
And because this is a written piece of art by a person at Hollywood, the right thing does work out. So
mm-hmm.
it's going to, I believe in him.
Sabine solves the riddle of the map and unlocks it. Then droids show up to steal the map. She notifies Ahsoka. She manages to kill one of the droids. Temporarily disable one of the droids. The other one grabs the map, destroys her recordings, and then she has to fight a Sith apprentice. She almost holds her own, but gets injured and the Sith gets away with the map.
I thought she seemed pretty overmatched from the beginning.
She doesn't die instantly, which is why I say she held her own for somebody who's not trained. But
did you get the idea that Darth Grimes is playing with her?
A tiny bit.
Because I did, especially the second time I watched it, and I was thinking about what Darth Swanson said about, you know, like, there's so few Jedi left.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, really the novelty of fighting another Jedi, I kind of felt like she was sandbagging it a little bit.
Savoring the the experience.
Yeah, like, she only left when she was ran off by Ahsoka.
Yeah.
But I felt like she could have stuck Sabine about almost any time because she was just taking these big swinging. Hey, it reminded me a lot of Luke Skywalker come after Vader, where she's just chopping wood, leaving her massively over swinging, leaving her back turned to her opponent. Tons of just very, very passionate but sloppy fighting.
It's definitely better coordinated than any lightsaber fights in the original trilogy. But yeah, she's got that vibe.
Do you have a problem with her? Because, like, this is something I saw some nerd rage being vented on and on Twitter. Do you have a problem with her surviving a lightsaber wound to the gut?
No. Because I think if you don't hit vital organs, a lightsaber kind of is its own.
Yeah.
Unless you get, like, chopped in half or it's through your heart or both lungs or something, I think you can live through that. Yeah. Because it cauterizes as it goes through, right?
People are like, well, Qui-Gon Jinn would be curious to learn about this Jedi art. Like, look, you fucker. Qui-Gon Jinn got stuck right through his heart, and then he sat there on the floor for, what, 5 minutes while the force shield cycled?
Mm-hmm.
And then Obi-Wan had to battle his ass, and they were still in the middle of a fucking reactor. Under that's a lot different than someone getting stabbed in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
Getting ran off instantly and being taken to
immediate medical attention.
Flagship of the Rebel Alliance, where they have Bacta and everything else. And I'm like, God damn, I love a good nitpick. Fucking find some good nits to pick.
Yeah. I'm with you.
It's not like it's total vaporization when you stick a lightsaber in somebody. It cauterizes the wound.
Right.
Probably hurts like a bitch, but.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't want that through a vital organ, but. It's okay. And that's kind of it. That's where
they had, like
the
I said,
episode.
They had the tribute to Rey at the end. And if you didn't know, that's Rey Stevenson, like we mentioned. He's Darth. What is his actual name? Balin?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if he's a Darth, but I've been calling him Darth Swanson throughout.
Probably not.
It's a damn shame. He's a great villain.
Yeah, I saw he was only in two episodes as listed on IMDb, so
seriously,
he might not be back, which is
what,
really
that's just
disappointing.
Because I haven't updated the IMDb.
Maybe.
How in the world? It would feel like such a drop plot point if he never shows up again,
right?
Or I bet that's just IMDb not being updated.
I hope so. I hope so.
Because I heard that he died shortly after, but definitely after they finished filming.
Okay. Yeah, I hope he's in the rest of the season because I do like him. He's in the next episode, which we should start talking about.
Yep.
Episode 2 starts with Sabine recovering in a hospital. She wakes and tells Ahsoka that she unlocked the map, but got zero information out of it, which is pretty annoying. Also, her records were destroyed. She wants to help, but Ahsoka says, "You've done enough," in her snarkiest Jedi voice. Ahsoka can hear Sabine's dreams. I think this is one of the things with Ahsoka. She has some powers around being very empathetic, let's say, being able to kind of sense people's thoughts very well, maybe more than the average Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure, because, well, you're talking about Sabine, right?
Well, no, Ahsoka being able to kind of hear the dream that Sabine is having here.
Oh. Yeah, I guess so.
I was reading about Ahsoka's powers because I was trying to figure out if she was able to run fast and just didn't. But that's never mentioned. She can jump really high, which I would think would translate to running fast very well.
I would think so,
but
too.
But one of the things that they noted is her sort of empathic powers.
Gotcha. Because it's funny because I know that that's one of the things that Ezra is he had like animal telepathy, like Aquaman powers.
Oh, really?
Okay. That was like his like specialty, that he had an affinity to for other beasts and creatures.
Oh, so I bet there's like a lot of good pet stuff.
Well, it's funny because like I was laboring under the illusion for the first time I watched this that like Sabine and him were brother and sister. So I was kind of looking to see if there was like, you know, some kind of like, you know, she's got that pet thing. And but then I was just completely wrong. They don't have any kind of genetic sharing at all.
Nope. He thinks of her as a sister.
Does he?
I think that was part of his hologram.
Is that what he said in the hollow? Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
recording.
Gotcha. Maybe that's why I got it from. Because I remember having a clear... I think they had a very strong similar appearance when I was looking at that mural. Like, it's like, oh, they both have oddly colored hair. They kind of have similar shade of skin. Kind of fits. And if he said something about, like, you're my little sister, like, oh, yeah. But yeah, because I got that clear impression the first time through.
Yeah, he mentions it, but it was, I think of you as a sister, even though we're not related. Let's go over to the Sith visiting another temple site where they put the map on a pedestal and Baylan says to let Morgan know that they've located the reflex point of Cetos, whatever the fuck that means. Another incredibly boring, self-important map scene. Enough. It's like they're trying to import all the weight of Thrawn's return through this map, and it's not fucking working. The music, you can put all the music you want behind this 5-minute long scene of placing a ball on a pedestal, and it ain't any more interesting. Sorry.
Also, I will say this, the ancient jungle stuff works a little bit better in Indiana Jones than it does in Star Wars. It always kind of cracks me up when they go to like what looks like the ruins of an Incan temple and they plug in something and lasers start shooting out of it and everything. It's like, okay, poison arrows and giant stones and stuff. What's this fucking laser beam shooting out? You know, there's no sunlight hitting this. This isn't the Staff of Ra or whatever. Come on. But
we're almost to the point where I can talk about my disappointment in the style, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
But so the other thing is, like, we were just talking about this the other day in context of Foundation, that they introduced this race of spacers who's their dream, their purpose is to go extra galactic, to leave the Milky Way galaxy and sail the ocean of the deep space. Mm-hmm. We talk about how rare, like most science fiction series kind of realize that like going to a different galaxy is like an order of magnitude harder than going to another star. Like it's
to have instantaneous travel.
Like in Star Trek, going to another galaxy is roughly as unimaginable as we think going to another star system is with slower than light travel.
Yep.
It shocked me when they suggested that there was going to be like widespread extragalactic travel, but they're also kind of suggesting that maybe there's like a wormhole. Like, I think that's what they're saying, this reflex point, this path of peridity or whatever, this reflex point of Cetos. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that seems like they're suggesting that there's like a tunnel or a passage that can get you there faster, which I hope, because if they just open this up to like multiple galaxies, that seems insane to me.
Yeah, there's not enough hyperspace in the Star Wars universe to get you to another galaxy.
on even
powerful Sith timescales.
Yeah.
Ahsoka goes to Sabine's home to see where what she can learn from its residual force imprint. I guess she's hearing kind of the events that took place there through the force and through her pet. Maybe it's the pet talking to her. I don't know. She sees the recording from Ezra and finds and disables the droid that Sabine thought she took out. Ahsoka must be pretty familiar with this pet. She looks at it got a relationship with it. Must be a Rebels thing.
I imagine they shared a ship together for a while.
But this is all set up for what's going to come here in the next scene, where Ahsoka takes the droid's head back to Sabine so she can check out its memory to see where it came from. And she finds out it came from Corellia, the New Republic shipyard. And Ahsoka realizes that Morgan used to operate out of there during the Empire's reign. So she decides to go check it out while Sabine recovers, and Harris says, I'll meet you there.
Not sure why you would design a combat droid to remember where it was dispatched from when its head is destroyed. But I guess like you have to be just an unimaginably good electrical engineer to like hotwire circuits.
An artist can do it.
Or an artist. An artist, yeah. It's...
I don't know her backstory. Perhaps she's an engineer and an artist. There are some polyglots out there who kind of can do it all.
Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like picking up Indiana Jones and asking him for his expertise on the Mona Lisa and then how to reprogram a positronic brain.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. You got some dusty bones for me, kid? Yeah, she didn't. I don't know. It's a slow stake scene, I guess.
Hu Yang. Hu Yang is like, oh, it's the end of the world for him, man. Those 75% original parts that he's still got, he wants to keep those.
That's the most unrealistic thing. A robot that's lived in his galaxy for 25,000 years and just doesn't want to die constantly. I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
Especially being around humans for that long. Yeah.
Right. Ugh. Right.
And there's a little pep talk at the end of this scene from Hera to Sabine, mm-hmm. trying to get her to not necessarily forgive Ahsoka, but go back to her and try and continue her training.
To see the fundamental truth of you guys are so much more similar than you're different, and that you can help each other rather than be mad at each other.
Mm-hmm. Then Morgan arrives at the witch site. I don't know what this is. And opens up the map for the Sith to take a look at. It points the way to the path to Peridia, where Grand Admiral Thrawn is banished. It's a fairy tale place, according to Baylan. Morgan tells them to prepare for the Eye of Sion to arrive, I think. Baylan sends the apprentice to Corellia to assist with the final transport. All very
I believe we see the Eye of Sion by the end of this episode. That's that big jump ship she's making.
Big old ring looking thing with 9 hyperdrives in it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like anything about this witch plotline. It doesn't feel Star Wars-y to me. It feels very Marvel-y is the problem. It looks very Marvel-y. Like, the way there's a scene. So it starts here where she kind of opens up this map, and it's very, like, particle-based. And it's just not the art. The visual language of Star Wars is much clunkier than this. And to me, like, when you have a holo projection of any kind, it needs to look like an old VHS tape with the scan lines, with the blue filter.
But three-dimensional.
It has to look like that because that's Star Wars, right? This feels very Marvel, where things are going to expand around you and you're going to be kind of inside
this thing. Stark technology.
It's Stark technology or just like magic Loki shit. Mm. It's like... Mm. It's that kind of thing. And it gets even worse later in the episode when we kind of get to the Eye of Sion and you see inside of its bridge where it's very like curved gold structure, again, like a Loki would have. Or and then the holograms of the actual people are made up of these particles. And I'm like, that tech just that's not a piece of tech from Star Wars. I don't like it. It feels like they're really trying to branch Star Wars out into a general encompass everything like Marvel. And it comes back to the music too in some ways. Look, I think I blame George Lucas a lot for this, for injecting kind of this shitty more pop type music in there. But they're like that Sabine introduction.
Oh, right, with the Jabba dance and
right in Jabba's palace.
Nub nub.
Kunite, right? That thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Lucas started it, but I didn't like it then either. It's not like it's been good and they're ruining it here. It's like they're just kind of adding on and trying to expand Star Wars in a way that doesn't feel like Star Wars.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because I can definitely, things either feel like Star Wars, they don't feel like Star Wars. I definitely feel like this feels like Star Wars, though. I don't even have as big a problem with, like, the map. Like, I feel like I've seen, Didn't Obi-Wan go to the Jedi librarian and like whip out a map that was a lot like this?
You can't quote him and Yoda looked at it. At me. You can't use that as a leg.
I'll have you know,
man,
that this was Attack of the Clones. So
well, I guess I gotta take it.
But yeah, I mean, these are concerns you're allowed to have as an elder millennial. That the George Lucas has thrown your favorite franchise to a bunch of wolves and put a bunch of wolves in the franchise.
As I mean, he's one of the wolves.
Clearly
too.
Has.
I don't want to say that he's not a wolf in this scenario, because he definitely was.
Oh, yeah.
But now the people who ran the Marvel franchise successfully for a decade have a hold of this thing, and they don't seem like they can be trusted to faithfully reproduce the Star Wars that... Just the feel of Star Wars. I mean, it comes back to the Boba Fett thing. Like, those mopeds. That moped biker gang has no fucking business being in a Star Wars world.
No, that's terrible. Do you have any ideas of what Darth Swanson's talking about when he talks about the path leading to unimaginable power?
No. I don't.
Well, make an uneducated guess based on my knowledge of the EU. I'm just going to say names. So we can talk about it in feedback, because I don't think even Jim knows about this. Don't go Googling this if you don't want to know. but I wonder if it's Joris.
Mm-hmm.
Or I wonder if it's, I don't know, I've never known how to pronounce this. Isalamir. Or maybe Y-Salamir.
I am ever you so like vaguely familiar with Joris. I always called him Seaboth, but it could be Kaboth. And I'm slightly more familiar with the Salamir stuff. I don't know how to pronounce it either.
I think that one of those things I could see, because like I've power from a Jedi's perspective. Like it's like if Thrawn's got a fleet of 100 battle cruisers, he doesn't give a shit about that. Mm-hmm. If Thrawn's got some kind of the super weapon, again, he's not going to give a shit about that. But something that is intrinsic to like force and force ability that can give him extra knowledge or power or an edge over force users, that's where I'm thinking. I think those two would be interesting ways to... Those are also things introduced into the Heir to the Empire trilogy. So I think it'd be interesting. Those are what I'm looking forward to, as spoiler-free as I can make it.
Gotcha. Yeah, that stuff could get really interesting, I think. All right, let's go back to Ahsoka and Hera arriving on Corellia, where they meet Min Weaver, the regional supervisor at the shipyards. They begin inspecting the facilities, and Hera, while they're kind of writing a thing here, tries to convince Ahsoka to take Sabine back on as an apprentice, but she's unwilling because she says Sabine's not ready. You just know.
Yep.
So do they.
I mean, that's the force. That's the one thing. Like, yeah, you just, it's all feels, man. It's all vibes.
Yeah, it's very, like I said, very Luke Skywalker, Yoda, Obi-Wan kind of thing. I like that. Sabine apparently is all patched up, and Huyang badgers her into trying to get back into her apprentice relationship with Ahsoka. It's an assault on all fronts here. It seems only a matter of time before it happens. And the matter of time is about 46 minutes, the runtime of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I like it, though. Like, all of the things he's saying here to Sabine make sense. They make sense, right? I especially, like, the only time you're wasting is your own. You know, you got to put yourself out there, and it's on somebody else to say, yeah, I don't want to give you my time. But if you're not willing to even ask for their time, then it's just your own time you're wasting.
Yeah.
I like that.
I also love how the ice cold slam he gave, where she's like, I just never had the talent or the abilities. And he's like, yeah. And this is speaking in a capacity of someone who's been serving the Jedi for 25,000 years. You are by far the, like, your aptitude of force would fall far short of all apprentices.
Right.
Like, wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's rough.
It'd be like if you're at the gym, you know, and you're like some kind of cyborg gym teacher, and you're like, oh, I'm running out here slow, coach. and he's been teaching high school for 25,000 years. He's like, let me tell you, not only are you running slow, you are the slowest freshman I've ever seen huff and puff on this track.
That's what he said to Ahsoka. You are the slowest apprentice I have ever seen. It's Anakin like, it's like was it, all yeah. about that.
It's something that Young could have said to make her feel bad. But you can at least run as just a normal, unattuned, but human. You can run uh-huh. faster than your master, so you got that.
Yeah, you do have human legs. All right,
she's not bogged down by those tails. Those tails just they just sap your dynamicism.
Oh yeah, and they're flat. They're hitting you in the chest. Oh, that flapping, can't be comfortable.
Yeah. You need to wear like a sport headdress to keep those things.
lock them down. So Min over at the shipyard shows Ahsoka and Hera their operations. Hera realizes that the engines they're building are far bigger than anything the New Republic would be using and has commissioned. Also, one of the droids says, oh yeah, we saw that assassin droid. It's departing with the hyperdrive right now, and the jig is up. Ahsoka and Hera are attacked by the workers who are still loyal to the Imperials. They deal with that, and then Hera chases down the ship, towing the hyperdrive, while Ahsoka deals with some more assassin droids and this Marak guy. The ship gets away, but Hera manages to place a tracker on it.
So they say that this is refurbished from a SSD, which I assume means Super Star Destroyer.
Uh-huh.
Which is the I can't believe in universe these things are referred to by that.
SSD, you don't like it?
Solid
state drive? Is that what's
Super Star Destroyer? We're going to invent a bigger aircraft carrier. What are we going to call it? We're going to call it Enterprise class.
I mean, it's in all the
class. No, we're going to call it the Super Aircraft Carrier. that's what we'll call it.
I feel like that's just a common thing. Doesn't that happen all the time?
That Executor class. Did you think that this hyperdrive looked very small?
For an SSD?
The engine pods of an SSD are roughly the size of a Star Destroyer. A Star Destroyer is canonically a mile-long starship.
Mm-hmm. They're enormous. And then
this hyperdrive, again, it's a core. Maybe this is like a spark plug in a hyperdrive. But this thing is like the size of, I don't know, a semi-truck?
Maybe I thought it was maybe the size of like a... At its largest, maybe the size of like a cruise ship.
You thought it was that? Oh wow! I thought Ahsoka's running right next to it. And it didn't dwarf her. Didn't seem like she was trying to catch the Titanic before it left the pier. You know,
right?
But like I said, maybe it's a much smaller component. They need nine of them. But I was kind of shocked at like, God damn! I thought that thing would be the size of a blockade runner or something at least, but
to power an SSD for sure.
Did we get to the fight part?
Yeah, we can talk about the fight. Do not neglect your training. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time, we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character Furiosa, starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role, and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis, Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film, as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com.
Let's see what knowledge is lurking inside this podcast. Here's more Tribe of Two.
Because like I said, the thing in the, I actually felt bad the control room scene. That just felt like slaughter. Like these poor schlubs are for the Empiring, and this Jedi Knight just cuts them down, and her and this general of the Republic just, yeah, it's just like there wasn't any heroes here. It was just butchery. Mm-hmm. But
this whole fight could have been avoided if Ahsoka could have just run fast.
Yes.
Because like, that's the third time,
I think the hyperspeed could have helped her out. And what's funny is like, I don't think this administrator was actually dirty. I think he was the only clean guy in the room.
He's just greedy, you think?
Well, no, I mean, he seemed genuinely shocked that all these people were Imperials. Did you think when he came back from behind the chair, all like shaking? Like, I think he had no idea he had this many Imperials on his staff.
So who's he selling the engines to? Just some nameless company that he doesn't look into? He doesn't know where this stuff is going?
Probably, yes. That he wasn't paying, you know, that they're... I don't think he's a super administrator, and he's particularly zealous about this Republic, but I don't think he's an Imperial loyalist.
You might be right. Right until
the gun started being drawn, I thought that he was definitely like, oh yeah, he's just in on it. But I don't think he is.
I think the thing that tips me into believing you here is when the droid reports seeing an assassin droid, he's like, why didn't you file a report?
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah. He doesn't freak
really
out.
Try and like, cover that up. It's an improper protocol that he's worried about. So you can be right. Either way, he's going to prison.
So where are we at in the recap? Syndulla taken off with her skiff? Have you recapped all that stuff?
Yeah. I didn't think to placing the tracker on the ship and it kind of warping.
Okay,
out.
I didn't think much of her ship, but I love Chopper. I thought Chopper was cool. I thought Chopper was funny. I found some cursory research that he has been voiced by Dave Filoni since the beginning of Rebels. Like it's okay. In fact, he's speaking English. I don't know if you noticed this.
Yes,
but
I could tell what he was saying. Yeah,
but it sounds like it's run through a kazoo and a harmonica, and then maybe some more After Effects
and then
processing.
On the top end is pulled out. Yeah,
but I do like it that you can kind of sort of tell what he's saying a little bit more than C-3PO.
Oh, found it. That yeah.
Yeah. Uh huh. Did you take my? Have you been through my stuff? And. Now, I will say that if I was going to throw a tracker on something, I would track the hyperdrive core rather than the tugboat that's taking it. And I almost wonder if that's going to be something that throws them off. That
maybe.
They're going to find it's going to be. I hope not, because goddamn, these Disney Plus Star Wars shows love doing that. Like, OK, here's
side
the thing
missions.
We're doing all season. But now we're going to have six side missions until we make incremental progress towards the plot at the end of the season.
Totally.
But yeah, like if they end up falling the tug, it's like, oh, we found the tug, but the hyperdrive core is over. Oh, we'll have to go through and find the dock records, and then we gotta go to a planet to find that. And it's just, I hope they don't do that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wasted time in these first two episodes, largely around the map. So we'll see how it shapes up as far as pacing goes. But yes, the side missions were incredibly annoying most of the time in Mando. And Book of Boba Fett was even worse.
All right.
I like how hilariously bad of an idea it is to try to bullshit the general of an army about how, like, what ships they're building and what they're building them for.
Although
she just squashes that so fast, and I love it. Hera's
yeah,
greatness.
Yeah, she's taking no shit from
right.
this guy.
Oh, well, then I authorize it. Open the thing, uh-huh. right? You, yeah. you want to bet I can't authorize it?
Look, I got Mon Mothma on my favorite
style. Speed dial, yeah.
Yeah, I got her on speed dial. If you really want to do this.
Yeah.
I thought the fight between Ahsoka and what's clearly Ezra is really, really cool. I really liked how she like dispatched that droid and used it as a human shield to advance on him. And then they mm-hmm. did these really cool, riposte? And the droid just got sliced up in between them. Oh, man, it's so cool.
I will put this out there. I think two blades is always superior to a double-ended blade.
Yeah. And I
Every
think that's
time.
Like, if you watch any like fight reenactor or someone that's like seriously studied martial arts and weaponry and things like that, they're almost universally scornful of these designs.
Yeah, there's a freedom of mobility with two yeah. blades that you just don't have with the single solid.
Yeah, and half the reason of like, and this is even worse because it's got a weird batleth thing in the middle, so you can't even do like the Ray Park twisty stuff. Although I guess it has an auto twister, so maybe you don't need to do that.
Sure, sure.
But like almost every instance of a double bladed lightsaber would be better with like a 6-foot thing of steel worth like and have like little lightsaber tips like a double ended spear. Or just be a solid, because like half the mm-hmm. reason you want to use a staff is you can slide your hands up and down, you know, use it
you
for
range,
reach, or you yeah. can if you're, but you can't do that. Your hands are locked into two places. If you put it any other place, your hands are going to get burnt. And
how long until
off.
We see lightsaber resistant gloves where they can do that? And that's the big surprise.
Make them out of Corbomite, right? They already have that.
Yeah. I mean, Mando's got it. Yeah, you can.
It, sure. There's like
that's the thing. It kills me how they've depowered all of these, demystified all these Jedis. Because the thing about
creep,
the Jedi
man.
Is they were supposed to be super rare, and they still pay lip service to that. But in the shows, they're everywhere, everywhere.
Yeah, and that's I guess a real problem of Rebels because they are literally everywhere. But they never get mentioned in the main narrative. But I guess they're
like,
fixing
I get
that
it in
now.
Clone Wars, but everything after that needs to have like one or maybe two Jedi, and that's it.
But it's, like honestly, if you think of rare. A whole galaxy where literally quadrillions of people are living, we could be seeing like a 0.00000001% of the population, and because it's Star Wars and we're following the most important exceptional stuff, you could still have Jedi almost everywhere.
Well, then don't have the characters who interact with Jedi on a daily basis, like hundreds of them, say, oh,
yeah,
Jedi are exceptionally rare.
You should, that's right. You shouldn't have a guy that sits on the Jedi Order, have 100 counts, 100 Jedi, being like, you know, Jedi, not what they used to be.
Right. But I blame George for that. He just kind of,
well,
you know,
everybody,
took us back
I blame
to a time
the fact
when
that
all the Jedi were there. And so now everything in the future needs to have those exciting Jedi characters. Otherwise, it's boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the case. I mean, everyone wants to be a Jedi. You either want to be Jedi, uh-huh. bounty hunter, or a smuggler. Everyone in the Star Wars galaxy
is one of those
three
professions. I want to have my own ship I can live on and go anywhere in the galaxy at any time. That's what I want to be.
Yeah, she's
a Jedi
smuggler. You got, you're even worse. You're a
Han Solo,
Luke Skywalker, Mary
Sue. She's not a smuggler. What's she smuggling? Star maps?
Well.
I don't want to be Ahsoka. I just want her ship, is what I'm saying. I want the Millennium Falcon. I want the
you
T6.
You want the freedom to roam.
Yeah. A place to live that is self-sufficient and I can just kind of go anywhere. That'd be great.
You're a smuggler.
Sounds like I just need to get an RV and live in that.
You still have to smuggle unless you're going to run Bald Movement. You guys, you could do Bald
yeah.
Movement RV. Because that's the thing. I don't think that people want to smuggle. It's like, well, they got this cool ship. I'm kicking around the galaxy. Fuck, I'm out of hyperdrive fuel.
How am I going to pay my
Shit,
bills?
I guess yeah. I'm smuggling.
This Wookiee eats all my fucking food. Every time I go
I mean,
to the fridge,
can,
it's empty.
You can haul space iceberg lettuce from Corellia to Tatooine, but have you seen the tariffs lately?
Oh, yeah. It's hard to make a living.
Yeah. It's
Plus,
real
you don't have health insurance. They don't count you as an employee. You're just
it's,
a freelancer.
It's real hard to keep hauling that lettuce. When a shoebox full of death sticks will pay your passage to 10 systems. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to start smuggling, but you're going to start smuggling.
It's nice to haul spice. All right, Sabine goes home, dons her Mandalorian armor, and cuts off her hair. I like this armor a lot. There's a good variety of color. It's a little mismatchy, but that's kind of what I like about it.
Yeah, it's not as coated many colors as like you see in the later stages of Mando, but it proves my point. You can't have long hair in these vac suited helmets.
Remember, is it a rule? Is it a Mandalorian rule, or is it just a practical thing?
I don't think it would work. Like, I don't think this thing would seal if you got hair. There's a reason why every girl on the Expanse has her hair, if she's got long hair, has her hair braided so tight her scalp's bleeding. Because that shit just don't work in space and zero G when you need to put a helmet on and off, and it needs a seal.
For sure. Yeah, I wouldn't see Bobby Draper with this haircut full time. She puts it up in a bun.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't go with the white, though. I think it could have been a super cool look, and it's obviously the look that the character has in the mural and probably in Rebels, so why not white on top and purple on bottom?
Because I got the idea that she's like, maybe, I don't know if this is true in Rebels, like maybe her hair changed a lot, but like the idea that like that was her style back in the day. She had this kind of like more outrageous ombre kind of look going on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. She doesn't look like the mural at all. That's the problem.
Yeah.
She looks like a cartoon character in a mural.
She does. All right. Min Weaver and his workers are arrested. Ahsoka gets a call from Sabine who says, "I'm ready." So she meets her back on her homeworld and takes her back as they head to the location that the tracked ship was found at or is now at. It's around a planet called Cetos in the Danab system.
Mm-hmm.
There's a discussion here about Min Weaver and his workers here. Like, why are they so loyal to the Empire? And Ahsoka says it's not loyalty, it's greed.
Although that For the Empire guy seemed pretty loyal. You don't do that when it's just your checkbook, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to look at this from a certain point of view, right? The Empire itself, was it sustained by ideals or was it sustained by people who wanted to get theirs? Like, was everybody on board with the Emperor ruling the galaxy because they really fucking love the Emperor and think he should
rule?
Probably
had a core. Or was it like, a good third
I can have a great
citizens.
Life here.
But then there's probably a lot of people that, you know, just were trying to go along, get along, and then you had a smaller resistance. But
yeah, you'll always have fanatics, certainly.
So, like the fact that the whole control room was on is probably greed. But that one guy, you know, maybe
for the Empire, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, he was on the wrong hyperspace channels.
Uh huh.
He was getting his head full of Imperial propaganda,
for sure.
The other thing that bugged me about Sabine cutting her hair,
what's that?
She didn't leave herself a Padawan braid. She should have saved the rat tail so she could have Padawan braided it. Now she's gonna have to wait to grow it out.
Mm-hmm. You're right. She'll cut.
What do you do with species? What does Padawan braids look on species like an Ithorian? Species have no hair. I actually thought about that. Does every species have a Padawan mark? Do like you pull a tooth or you trim a tusk or you break off a horn?
I mean, Grogu didn't get one when he trained under Luke.
True, but he didn't have any hair. That's what I'm saying.
Right? Oh, you're saying do they get something different? Or yeah, because I was picturing like they just staple on a tuft of some kind of hair on.
Yeah, it's hot glue on some. Fucking ponytail. Here you go.
Here yeah, you go, but I don't know. What would Grogu have?
Like I said, piercing, I honestly don't know. I don't know if there's any canon behind this.
Huh. Yeah, good question.
I like what Darth Balin said about seeing Ahsoka in the Force. That her presence is elusive, but her determination vivid.
And yeah, that's here
for us.
Here in this next scene where the hyperdrive
is loaded. We were there.
Into the Eye of Sion. And Balin calls Morgan to say he's worried about Ahsoka's involvement. Because, yeah, what you said, he's not sure about some things, but he knows that she is determined.
And it's a shame that you have to kill another Jedi because there's so few left.
Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not a fan of the look of any of this. I think it's all very Marvel-y, not very Star Wars-y.
What about the ship? Because, like, the thing is when you're saying Star Wars-y, like, the Rebels had a look, the civilian ships had
an
a look.
Extremely lived-in
and
look.
The Imperials had a look, and the Empire had a look. Like, this is just a different faction, right?
Well, the yes, it is a different faction, but the particle effects on the technology, it still exists within that galaxy, right? And I feel like the galaxy has a visual language, and this
so it's all
is not
about
it.
The because you're talking about the gold curves and like, well, that's just like a cultural detail. Like, you know, the Hapians had their crazy space dragon ships and things, but like, so you're saying it's just the graphics, essentially, the UI.
I mean, there's something
on everything
that bothers me about the architecture of the ships too. I don't like the. Maybe it's because I've seen the Marvel stuff and now this feels so reminiscent of it because it's coming from the same places.
And honestly, probably the same people are doing it. I imagine a lot of the previz people on Marvel and production, and they probably cross-pollinate all those thousands of names that scroll by. I bet there's a lot of the similarities there.
Yeah, I don't think you can avoid that because, you know, ILM's going to handle this stuff. But it's primarily the tech of it where I'm like, there is a visual language established already. Why are we not using it?
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. Maybe I'm nitpicking too much. But you know what? I can't nitpick about the Rebels continuity, so I'm going to nitpick about the old school Star Wars stuff.
All right. Any other final thoughts?
The end credit sequence also doesn't feel very Star Wars-y. That feels very low-key type stuff, too.
Yeah. Credit sequences, I don't know.
Yeah, where's the pulp? Where's the fun? Where's the fun in this show, man? It's taking itself way too seriously. Can
it
we have
a
Han
little...
Solo? Can we have a Chewbacca?
I think
Hera.
I think Hera is that she's just not in it enough. And I think that there's also I think that Sabine and Ahsoka look like they'd be fun. It's just they're in a bad spot right now.
Yeah, hopefully they'll get there because this show needed an injection of fun. Especially in these first two episodes. And Hu Yang almost gets there, but he's so
serious,
too.
It's very dry. It's
very British, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me those, you know, borderline... don't go to Jar Jar levels, because that stuff sucked. But give me, like, the Han Solos, the people who are telling wry jokes and, you know, making mistakes and doing kind of silly things every once in a while, but you still think they're cool, you know?
Agreed.
Sabine almost gets there at the beginning. I like her introduction. That feels kind of fun, but there was just nothing else in here.
Like I said, that's one of the things about the two sides of Filoni. I hope he doesn't lean too much on the... Because Ahsoka is his baby. That's his central, like, his gift to the Star Wars canon. And it feels like if he leans a little bit too... and gets a little too much into the myth-making... It's gonna that's not like Lord of the Rings isn't very funny either. It's too mythic.
Occasionally,
it doesn't have the pulp that the Star Wars has. So it's like if he I can see him getting a little too self important because these are his babies and he's taking them very seriously. But I don't know. Again, like maybe Rebels was a laugh a minute and we just need to relax. We'll see.
Maybe I'm gonna give it time. You know, I mostly like these first two episodes.
I like that hell of a lot more than I thought. I kind of got a little self-conscious because I'm openly antagonistic of the people that are like, oh, you just need to watch these 17 episodes in less than a week. And it's like, okay, whatever. less the 7 years worth of stuff. But it's like, I started feeling like, God, like, I don't want to go into this project to hate it. Like, I went in this project because we had the time to do it. And I thought the trailer looked cool. But also, I could hate this project. But I was like, man, I hope I'm doing this for the right reasons. But yeah, I liked more than I didn't.
I could still go either way. I'm right there.
There too. Because if they continue to, like, if this becomes a like, oh, it's a chase and they're one sector behind and doing a whole bunch of like missions of the week, I'm going to get tired of that really quickly.
Gotcha.
That's a Mando only trick, and I barely put up with it on that show.
And if it becomes too witchy, I guess. Too Marvel, too witchy, too, like...
I hope it gets witchy.
That's not Star Wars to me, man. I the Force is about all the witchy I can handle.
See,
in
so
Star
you
Wars.
are a Jedi Sith purist.
Jedi Sith purist?
No room for other Force traditions. You don't like witches.
I mean, it can be done right, I guess. Maybe it's that I don't like them calling them witches. That feels too real world to me.
Didn't Anakin call Qui-Gon a wizard?
Sure, yeah. I mean, Obi-Wan's called that too, right?
It's an easy thing. It's an easy thing to call somebody when they're using magic powers.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all the path to Peridia and prophecy and like all this other stuff. And I know that exists in the Force powers, but I'm not a fan of fantasy. And I can only tolerate so much of it. And when it becomes mostly fantasy, it's going to lose me. And that's the line I have to draw. But so far, we're just shy of that being too much, I think. There's enough of the Star Wars that I love in there to keep me engaged.
All right, are we done? Are we done as Ahsoka for this week?
I think so.
We actually did get some feedback as people found out we were covering the show. Don't have time to cover it. This is a double episode. I'm going to save all that for next week. But if you'd like to send us feedback, starwars@baldmove.com. Instead of changing it for every show, I think I'm just going to do this like the Star Trek. I'm just going to go Star Wars. starwars@baldmove.com. We will consider that on the next podcast, time allowing. If you would like to find out what else we're doing, because we're in the middle of Justified City Primeval Watch, we are gearing up to do Daryl Dixon, The Walking Dead. Loki's coming back. We're going to be doing that. We're also doing Apple TV Plus's Foundation, a fantastic science fiction series, by the way. Best way to follow us is on all our social medias, at Bald Move, except for TikTok, at Baldest Move. Just pick your favorite one and go there. And if you'd like to support what we do here at Bald Move and help us continue to make podcasts and defer the cost of that and get stuff for yourself like ad-free feeds and more bonus audio content, check out support.baldmove.com. That's it for Ahsoka this week. We think we're going to have this out significantly earlier next week. We're going to try to get these out on like Wednesday evenings going forward.
Yeah, that's the plan.
But yeah, we'll be back a little bit earlier next week, hopefully. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
May the Force be with you.